Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. And joining me for this episode of Gators Breakdown, our Georgia opponent preview, is co-host and founder of ReadingReaction.com. That's Will Miles, and you can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC. So Will, first time it's ever happened, but we have to re-record an episode for whatever reason. YouTube didn't back up this recording of our Georgia preview. So of course, you know, the best team on Florida's schedule, we're going to have to talk twice about.
See, I just figured you thought I was being too positive last time, and so you decided to erase it and just claim that it had been lost in the archives. But hey, you know, we'll do it again. I've come up with some more material, anti-Georgia propaganda. So we'll lay some of that out tonight.
I will say I'm so glad Georgia doesn't have Joe Burrow as quarterback.
Well, people have enjoyed making fun of me a little bit, and you know, we'll see, because they get Miami right off the bat.
All right. If you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to our LSU preview where Will confesses his man crush for Joe Burrow.
Hey, I've bought the property on Burrow Island, and hopefully he can take it to Georgia on the road.
That's right. Georgia and LSU do play each other. So Florida and Georgia both play LSU this year as cross-division opponents. So, of course, Florida plays them every year, and Georgia will have to play LSU and Auburn this year. So before we dive into this Georgia preview, remember you can find all the Gators Breakdown episodes on newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find articles from the News for Jack sports team there as well. They'll be ramping up coverage for the Gators, Jaguars, all that stuff here in Jacksonville. You can also find all the past opponent previews that we've done so far up to this Georgia game at newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown. Also, listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube if you want the video version, and follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. When using their services, please rate and review the show. Let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. Well, if we go back to last year, and you know, it was a weird game because just so much went into it off the field, lead up to the Georgia game. You know, all the rumors of Jim McElwain being fired going into the game, the week of, the day of, and the Gators just went on to get blasted 42-7. But that's not to take away anything from that Georgia team. That, you know, they were just that good. But now, you know, how good are they this year after they probably lose one of the best linebackers in college football in Roquan Smith, lose Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, have to replace 7 starters on defense, some of the key offensive linemen as well. And going back to last year and seeing the whooping they put on Florida, you know, there's some hope. With everything they lost last year, you know, that the gap closes just a little bit between Florida and Georgia this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that really is going to be the hope, because Kirby's lining up the cabinets there with recruits, and this might be the year to get them, particularly with some of the running backs who are graduating, and as you mentioned, the linebackers as well. One thing that I think has been a little bit overlooked is the defensive backs. So there are a couple of defensive backs who've left this year, and you know, typically that's one of the areas where bringing in young guys, can really struggle, even if they have a lot of athletic ability. So we'll see. I think this season will say a lot about Kirby Smart's coaching ability. I think some of the youth might allow somebody to get Georgia, particularly in some of the road games. But, you know, we're also not talking about a murderer's row schedule. It's not like they're facing a bunch of top 10 teams all year long. So, you know, we'll see. I think there's a reason Georgia was picked to be first in the SECs this year by the media. And, obviously I think that they're the favorite going in, but sometimes it's a lot easier to be the hunter than it is the hunted.
That is my question about Georgia too, is how do they respond after, a dominant regular season? They only had the one regular season loss versus Auburn. They got the revenge in that game, in the SEC championship game. Good showing there, a good showing in the postseason against Oklahoma, and a really good showing in the national championship game, but on the short end of the stick against Alabama. But how much does that Alabama game play into it? Georgia wasn't pegged last year as a team that could make it to the national championship game. They got there. Lo and behold, if they keep handing the ball to Sony Michel, they probably win that game. But they, for whatever reason, quit giving the ball to him. But that was a game they thought they had wrapped up. They thought they were about to celebrate a national championship, and it all come crashing down with a second and 26. That is my question about Georgia, is how do they respond after the heartbreak of losing that game?
Yeah, I mean, you can think of teams where fingers start pointing and where guys decide that it's their opportunity to start. And maybe, everybody bought in last year to the team concept. And is Kirby going to be able to get everybody to buy into that team concept again this year? At the same time, because they didn't win the national championship, you do figure that they've got a pretty bad taste in their mouth and have been pretty focused this offseason. And so, you would expect some of that focus to be laid out on some of their early opponents. I do think, though, Georgia last year was very, very good. They scored 531 points, only gave up 246, which, if you look at their expected win total based on that differential, it'd be around 12.4. They won 13 games, went 13-2. So really, they played in line with what you would expect. But it's not as if they were really world beaters to start off last year. I mean, when they were playing Notre Dame, obviously on the road, a tough game, but they barely won that game. They didn't look great against Appalachian State, didn't look great against Samford. I mean, it wasn't until they played Mississippi State that they started to look good. And then after that, it was a murderer's row of Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Florida, and South Carolina. Not exactly top 25 level teams. And so until they reached Auburn, and then they played Auburn on the road and got beat. So, I think there's still some doubt. They played very, very well once they got to the playoff. They played very well against Auburn in the SEC championship game. So certainly they have that top gear, but they really weren't asked to have that top gear all last year.
Yeah. And what led that top gear, of course, even though, Jake Fromm came in as a true freshman after Jacob Eason went down and led that team to a national championship game appearance, it was still the running game with Michelle and Chubb, finishing the year, the whole offense, 435 yards a game, 35 points per game. They led the SEC in rushing there, as I mentioned, with those two guys, 11th in passing efficiency there. They lost some of those parts with Michelle and Chubb, but it's looking at that running back, and I still think, even though they've lost the name recognition, I still think this offense is going to be built behind. I think they'll hand more to Jake Fromm, of course, being a more experienced and being able, what he showed last year, putting more on his shoulders. But I still think it's going to be a run first offense with DeAndre Swift, Elijah Holyfield, Zamir White, a true freshman there, James Cook, another true freshman. Look, they're stacked at running back again, just as Georgia has been for quite some time now. Even though Jake Fromm, and I like what he showed late in the season against Auburn, against Oklahoma, against Alabama, it's still, in my opinion, still going to be built at, with this run game in mind.
Yeah, well, and that's what Georgia wants to do, and certainly that's what Kirby Smart wants to do, and be able to control the game with his defense and his running game. But I do think we need to acknowledge that they're losing 388 carries, 2,578 yards, a 6.6 yard per carry average, and 31 touchdowns when you talk about Chubb and Michelle. So even if you project out to these guys coming in are going to be very, very good, they're not going to be elite, and or, you know, I wouldn't expect them to be elite or just as good as those guys. And so, you know, hey, let's say they only have 27 touchdowns instead of 42 next year from the running backs. Well, that's still 105 points you got to make up someplace else. I don't expect this offense to be this juggernaut that puts up 45 points a game. I just don't. It's not the way it's built. You know, they're not really built to be high flying. It's not built to be like a Florida offense under Urban Meyer, where they were going to chuck the ball all over the place. The other thing is that Florida brought in a lot of 5-star athletes to replace Percy Harvin. And everybody kept saying, oh, there'll be the next Percy Harvin, the next Percy Harvin. And we've all experienced there is no next Percy Harvin. And I wonder whether George is about to feel the same thing with Michelle and Chubb. I mean, those guys were really, really good players. And they're bringing in really good players behind them, but do they have that same skill level? Just because there's a 5-star behind their name does not mean that they are elite, elite. I mean, these are guys who got drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. I think it's something we need to acknowledge that, A, running backs don't really get drafted in the first 35 picks in the NFL draft very much anymore, unless they're special. And two, Georgia had two special guys back there, and now a lot of that weight is going to land on Fromm.
Andre DeBose is still on Florida's roster, right? Still waiting to be Percy Harvin?
He's got like one more year of eligibility, doesn't he?
Oh, man. So, you know, helping that run game was the offensive line. And I mentioned earlier, they're losing some guys there too. And they weren't small. They were a pretty big offensive line. But the now 320-pound Andrew Thomas moving over from right tackle to left tackle. But you got Andre Baker, who's a lighter, versatile guy. You know, he was he probably can bring a little bit of upside to the guard spot there. Right side, Lamont Galliard there. Pretty good. I think I said his name right. And then I think the guy you really have to watch out for, and, you know, I think he was a pretty big surprise last year on the recruiting trail, Jamari Sawyer. He's probably going to be, go back and looking at, you know, these true freshmen that come in and, you know, keep surprising, and especially along the offensive line. I think it's really tough for offensive linemen to come in as a true freshman to come in and play, but we keep seeing it, and Sawyer's probably going to be another one that comes along that phrase. So the offensive line was their biggest question to me last year. You know, first year under Kirby Smart there and Chaney, the offensive coordinator. I think, you know, talking to my Georgia friends and going back to this time last year, that was their biggest question mark. Is they didn't think they could do what they did last year, mainly because of the offensive line. Well, now they saw just how much of improvement 1 year can make, and they don't expect much of a fall off this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect so, especially if you look at the talent profile. Actually, if you look at the offensive line, that's where the least amount of talent on Georgia's offense is, but that's just because everywhere else is loaded with 5-star guys. So Fromm was a high-level 4-star, and then you got Swift at running back, 5-star. Hardman, Godwin, and Ridley at wide receiver, who are 5-stars. Isaac Nada at tight end, who's a 5-star. And then you get to the offensive line, and Gaillard's a 4-star, Ben Cleveland, 4-star, Kendall Baker, 4-star, Isaiah Wilson, 5-star, Andrew Thomas, high-level 5-star, and some of the other guys that you mentioned. I mean, they're just loaded from a talent perspective. This isn't something where you're like, oh, there's going to be a couple of injuries, and they aren't going to be able to replace anybody. There's really only one spot where they can't afford an injury, and that's likely at quarterback. You know, Justin Fields, obviously, is the number one recruit coming in at quarterback, but he doesn't have any tape at all to suggest, you know, again, you can look at high school and you can try to project, but he was one of those fast risers towards the end. What happens when he gets put into a game situation if he has to, because something happens to Fromm? Fromm had the broken wrist earlier this year. You know, we'll see what happens as that goes, but that's, you know, the backup quarterback is gone. Last year they had Jacob Eason. If something happened to Fromm, they could bring Eason back in. They don't necessarily have that this year. So that's one area where depth is maybe a little bit lacking.
Yeah. And I do agree. You mentioned that, and Justin Fields and Jake Fromm being there, you know, look, I'm sorry. I don't get there. You know, there are some talk out there of somewhat, you know, it's not a lot out there, but somewhat of a quarterback controversy. There should be none. You know, Jake Fromm, you know, he's not a superstar quarterback, and I wouldn't necessarily call him a game manager either. Even with that running game, I think he's slightly above that, but I wouldn't call him an elite quarterback either. I think he's kind of somewhere in between that game manager and that playmaker type of quarterback. You know, true freshman, as I mentioned, came in for when Eason went down. And like I said, I go back and he kind of was serviceable up until what he did toward the end of the season. You know, go back and also, you know, just look, 6'2", 225, 62% of his passes he completed, 2,615 yards, 24 touchdowns, and 7 picks. You know, I mean, that's good for a true freshman to come in and being able to go to Notre Dame and then play the, you know, albeit a downer, a not as strong SEC East, but, you know, still coming through that. But, you know, going to the last game of the season and against Georgia Tech, a rival, and then toward the end of the year, I mean, 74% of his throws against Georgia Tech and in the SEC championship win over Auburn, 20 of 29 for 210 yards and 2 touchdowns against Oklahoma. And then really good, you know, even it's Alabama's defense. And he kept Georgia in the game, not a lot of mistakes. You know, and I know you'll mention, Will, you know, since, of course, I mentioned we've already done this. So, you know, this Georgia preview, but the way he throws the ball to the outside, you know, he shows he can have the arm strength to get the ball to the outside a lot. It's just the way that this Georgia team, and kind of led by him and that running game, the way they ended the season, you know, I think that's the reason I put him or I label him more than just a game manager type of quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly showed a lot of poise while he was playing. I think, you know, he only averaged 20.3 passes per game when he was in there. Now, part of that's because he only had to throw 7 against Florida, so that drove the average down quite a bit. I think if you're really looking for the separation, though, the space where you look at is if you look at how he performed against ranked teams. He had a negative yards above replacement, which is a statistic I calculate based on yardage per pass and yardage per rush. So he only averaged 7.5 yards per pass, and he averaged negative 2.6 yards per rush against ranked teams, which indicated that he's taken some sacks. When you looked at unranked teams, he averaged 9.9 yards per rush, and he averaged 9.9 yards per pass and 3.9 yards per rush. So very, very much above average, very, very good against the unranked teams, and really below average against the ranked teams. Now, you're always going to see a split there, because whenever you play better teams, you tend to play worse as a quarterback, but it's pretty consistent that when he played teams that were pretty good, he struggled, and when he played teams that weren't, he did much better. And that coincides with a difference in the rushing statistics. So Georgia averaged 6.6 yards per rush in games against unranked teams, and then they averaged 4-point-something yards per rush against ranked teams. And so Michelle and Chubb weren't able to get off in those games. You know, the Alabama game's a great example. They only averaged 3 yards per rush in that game, and it stifled the offense. And it stifled the offense because of what you said earlier, that Fromm likes throwing to the outside, and he's going to do it regardless. And if the running game isn't a threat, then there are some things you can do on defense to take that away. In the game against Florida last year, there just wasn't anything the Gators could do to take it away because they couldn't stop the run. And then when they brought a safety up, the outside was open, and he took advantage of that too. So I do think I think the windows are going to get a little bit tighter for Fromm this year. But obviously, he's had a year to watch tape and work on things and get better. And the question will be, has he been able to progress in the way that you would want to see a quarterback progress from his freshman year to his sophomore year? And if he has, the team may put up game show numbers on offense. But if he's still sort of doing the same type of stuff that he did last year, I think he's going to struggle because the running game is not going to be as strong. And I think people are going to have some film on how to actually deal with Georgia, you know, with Fromm behind center. And that's not necessarily something that they had going into the playoff last year.
You know, and for the most part, you know, they were leaning on that running game, and the stats weren't there until later on in the season. You know, if you go back and look at, and to your point, you go back and look at that Auburn game last year where Georgia was a regular season loss. Only 45% of his throws were made, and he only threw for 184 yards. Well, there was only one game all year he threw for over 240 yards, and that's when they played Missouri. So, you know, as I said, part of that's leaning on the run game, but also part of that's being a true freshman, learning his way through. And by the end of the year, he was, you know, not so much of a freshman anymore. But, you know, he had some good weapons. You know, Javon Wims is gone now, but you have Terry Godwin, Mecole Hardman, Riley Ridley, you know, Georgia's deep there. But also, you know, in recent news, transfer Demetrius Robertson comes over, recorded 767 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns as a freshman in 2016. That's 2 seasons ago. Only played in 2 games last year before he got hurt. He was a highly rated recruit. Will, they just add another 5-star, one who actually has experience to their roster, coming in to help Jake Fromm out this year.
Yeah, I mean, they really needed it, right? That was a real position of need for Georgia. That it's a good thing they took care of that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had anybody to catch the ball. No, it's another weapon on the outside. It's another really, really good player out there. But again, I don't think that's going to decide the season. I think the interesting thing for Georgia is if you look at 2016 with Jacob Eason at quarterback, Isaac Nada as a true freshman, the tight end caught 29 passes, and overall Georgia's tight ends caught 41 balls plus another 8 to fullback Christian Payne. In 2007, Nada only caught 9 passes, Payne didn't catch any, and Georgia tight ends totaled 22. So he's not going across the middle. And that's odd because you would figure there'd be a lot of play action opportunities across the middle with that running game. But what was happening is that people were sort of daring him to throw outside, and he was able to do that. And they kind of had to dare him to throw outside because of Georgia's running game. And we'll see. If Georgia can establish the running game, he'll be able to do the same thing again this year. If Georgia can't establish the running game, or at least not as well, or it's not as big a threat, or if Swift is the only threat, and when Swift comes off the field and they bring Holyfield or someone else, or Harry in or someone else like that in, and, teams can play more cover too. We'll see whether Fromm forces the ball to the outside. And there, the transfers and the five-star guys on the outside, if you've got double coverage, it's not going to matter. So, again, I think this is last year those guys gave Georgia the ability to do something that really no one else in the country can do. And this year they may not have that ability, and we'll see how Fromm adjusts.
One thing we'll find have to figure out if teams want to get on Georgia this year, you're going to have to figure out how to slow them down early. Will last year, kind of just some key numbers here. First quarter scoring, Georgia 125, their opponents only 50.
Well, I mean, geez, they gave up 50 points. Kirby's going to be all over them. No, I mean, it's hard when you fall behind. Again, that sort of goes to, when we pick apart what Fromm is doing, he's only throwing 20 passes a game. Well, it's really easy to do when you're up by 3 touchdowns after the first quarter to not have to throw the ball. And so, that is going to be something. Now, we're going to move on to the defense in a few minutes, and the question will be, can the defense be as good as it was last year? And they're losing an awful lot there too. And part of jumping on teams early is not allowing them to score, getting the ball back to your offense, and being able to turn it around that way. So, those things work hand in hand. That's not just an offensive stat, and certainly, Even if Georgia's offense is a little bit better, I think they'll struggle a little bit more in the first quarter just because of what they have to replace on defense.
Yeah, and we talked about that running game, and Will, you talked about how important Chubb and Michelle were. 42 rushing touchdowns for Georgia, 8 for opponents.
Yeah, I mean, 42 rushing touchdowns is just obscene. Yeah. It really is. I mean,
Jake Fromm had 3 of those.
I don't know how many Florida had last year, but I'm betting it was not in the 30s. And yes, I mean, Georgia had an elite, or Georgia had a very good offense. I wouldn't say it was an elite. They had an elite defense last year.
They had an elite running game.
They definitely had an elite running game, though. You know, it's a little bit unfair to say that, because if you look at the offense on yards per play, they were 9th last year. They were 10th in pass yards per play and 4th in rush yards per play. So they were a very, very good offense last year as well. But again, that all sort of stems from the running game.
Yeah, you know, but going back and looking at even though they beat Oklahoma, going back and looking at that game, that was an elite offense.
Yeah, well, and they, let's be honest, they shouldn't have won that game.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you go back and look at it, Oklahoma had a bunch of opportunities to win. Didn't take advantage of it, and Georgia did. But at the same time, I think if we look at it, a missed field goal here or there, and Oklahoma is definitely playing for the national championship. But that just allowed us to have the 2nd and 26 and be able to crow about that all offseason because there was nothing else to crow about.
Yeah, it's funny how that worked. You know, the Rose Bowl, a game they probably shouldn't have won, and the National Championship game, a game they shouldn't have probably lost.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true too. And that goes back to the other thing that I do think we need to talk about when it comes to Georgia is, Kirby Smart has proven to be an elite recruiter. He has not proven to me, at least, that he's an elite in-game coach. So, the game against Alabama is a great example where, that game should have been won. And you mentioned them taking the ball out of Michelle's hands. They also then allow that play on 2nd and 26. I mean, that just can't happen. You can't have a busted coverage on 2nd and 26 in overtime. you know, and now he's dealing with, he's got a great problem that he's got all these 4- and 5-star guys on his roster, but that's a problem because those guys are going to want to play. And so how do you manage the egos? How do you manage that sort of stuff, especially now that the team is seeing success and the team is getting all of the accolades that come with being a top 5 program and being sort of the toast of the campus. And we'll see how he can deal with that. I mean, you know, Saban's struggling with that right now with Jalen Hurts and Tua. You've got Hurts out there complaining about how the coaches have been communicating with him. And Saban's the best coach probably of his generation. And, you know, Kirby doesn't have that sort of gravitas. He's probably a very good coach, but we don't know that yet from an on-game or from an in-game perspective. He hasn't shown that much. And then when you look at, and then when you look at the locker room stuff, we don't know anything about that either. So I do think that's something to take note of as the season goes. Certainly anything where there's a disagreement on the sidelines, probably going to get blown up. The microscope's going to be on these guys all year long. And, you know, we all remember sort of the 2009 season after the 2008 championship for Florida, where it just didn't feel like it was any fun. Because things, you know, Florida had blown everybody out in 2008, and in 2009 it was like, oh, you only won by 30. What's wrong? And you know, that's going to be the same thing that happens to Georgia. I mean, you know, if they come out and they beat Georgia Tech by a field goal, that's not going to be good enough. Last year, beating Georgia Tech by a field goal would have been good enough. This year, it's just not going to be.
All right, we'll move to the other side of the ball where Kirby Smart is known to be elite, and that's the defense. And the question is, is it rebuild or reload? Replacing 7 starters, losing Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter, you know, is it the defense that finished 6th in the nation in total and scoring defense. So the strength is probably the secondary this year, and until they figure those pieces out, they're led by DeAndre Baker. It is an interesting question. They have recruited well. You know, but there will be some young guys that have to fill in. So is it rebuild or reload? And still, you know, replacing Smith and Carter as guys, and pretty much the only proven guys who could get in the backfield consistently.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. So they're losing 9 of their top 15 tacklers. I mean, that's just an awful lot of firepower to lose. So they're losing 455 tackles, 45.5 tackles for loss, and 18 sacks. And that's about 50% of their production, you know, that they had last year as far as pressuring the quarterback and making tackles. They do get J.R. Reed and DeAndre Baker back in the defensive backfield, as you mentioned. But they're losing Aaron Davis, and they're losing Dominique Sanders. So, you know, they're losing a couple of guys back in that defensive backfield. They're going to have to have a couple of guys step up. Certainly, they've got talent to do that. But again, this goes back to the 2006 to 2007 Florida transition, where Tebow came in, won the Heisman Trophy. They were lighting up scoreboards all over the place. But some of those young defensive backs that Florida brought in, who turned out to be very, very, very good players, really weren't ready for that situation. There's sort of a lack of trust on defense, I think, if you look, especially when I'm remembering back to the Capital One Bowl against Michigan. You know, it was just, there was absolutely, that defense had no clue how to stop Michigan. And the next year, they stopped absolutely everyone. So it wasn't a talent thing. It was just an experience thing and a trust thing. And so, again, you know, maybe Kirby Smart is a better coach than Urban Meyer was at the time on defense. But I kind of doubt that. I mean, they had Charlie Strong on the staff as well. I do think that when you bring in young guys, that they can struggle. We actually saw that with Florida last year, where they had Marco Wilson and C.J. Henderson on the outside, and they showed a lot of promise, and they showed some flashes. But overall, the yardage given up was pretty bad last year for Florida. I think you can see something similar for Georgia. So they were 7th in defensive yards per play last year, 3rd in defensive pass yards per play, 32nd in defensive rush yards per play. So if they drop to, say, 20th in defensive pass yards per play, the defense is probably going to give up 4 or 5 more points per game. And that's not necessarily terrible. I mean, it would still be a top 20 defense. And I think maybe that's what we should expect, is a top 20 to top 30 defense, but not a top 10 defense like they were last year. And that 4 or 5 points makes a difference. That game against Notre Dame was 20-19. One more stop they don't get, that game goes the other direction, and that might be something that we see this year.
Yeah, like I said, you know, they'll be led by DeAndre Baker, you know, 5'11", 180 pounds, 44 tackles, 3 interceptions last year, 9 pass breakups. You're pretty good there. He could have went to the NFL, decided to come back, be one of the SEC's top corners there. It still goes back to how do they replace Smith and Carter? And it's more not just about stats, but the leadership as well, you know, especially from Roquan Smith there. You know, going to be playing in the NFL as a first round pick there. And DeAndre Walker probably one of the better playmakers there. Natres Patrick as well. Sophomore Monty Rice will probably get the first shot of being the guy who can come in and replace Smith. Walter Grant, maybe he can come in as well. Those are names there to watch out for. But you know, with Carter and Smith, and we the biggest key that we talked about is they needed to get some more plays behind the line. Those were the only two guys they could really kind of count on. The sacks were kind of came on toward the second half of the season last year. There were 11 in just the final three games alone, but not a ton of tackles for loss overall compared to your elite defenses like your Alabamas, like your LSU of the days. You know, they had 34 sacks and 93 tackles for loss as the season went on. But you know, that was a national title level defense. Alabama, 40 sacks and 111 tackles for loss. So 7 more sacks for Alabama and about 20 more tackles for loss. You know, that was the difference. And Alabama played in one less game compared to Georgia there. So, you know, you go look at stats. You know, if we're going to nitpick here and figure out, you know, what can this team do to keep being elite? Well, making plays behind the line of scrimmage, they probably need to start there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Last year, they forced 10 fumbles. They recovered 8 of them. Normally, that would be around 4 or 5. You usually recover about 50% of them. So certainly on the turnover basis, they did a really good job of getting when they got a fumble, when they got in the backfield, they were able to recover it. That probably won't continue next year. When you look at the success of the guys who are on the field who are returning, their ratios of tackles for loss and sacks, if you look at the ratios versus tackles, which is something I usually like looking at, it's the same for the guys who left versus the guys who are returning. So I don't know that we should expect their defense to be any more explosive than it was last year. The question is it going to be more like the last 3 games of the year, or is it going to be more like the first 12 games of the year? And you know, only time will tell. I would say they were 32nd in defensive yards per play. I mentioned that earlier, but they were 32nd against the run. And so they're going to have to get better against the run this year to protect some of those guys on the backside. And we'll see whether they can do that. But certainly they have to replace some guys, particularly the guys you mentioned at linebacker. And, you know, Patrick missed the last 2 games of the year last year because of some substance abuse issues getting treatment. And, I'm really, really happy that he's getting that. But, you know, that does mean that there's a risk at linebacker there as well. And, there's not a sure thing on this defense. It's less talented overall than the offense. There's only one five-star candidate at cornerback, Richard LeCount, who's on this projected starting 11 on the defense. That doesn't mean they're not talented. It just means they're not as loaded as the offense is. So it's not something where you're necessarily going to be able to just say, hey, we've got more talent than everybody else. We'll go out and win. The experience is going to make a difference. The talent will make a difference against some lesser opponents. But against a team like Florida or against a team like Tennessee or South Carolina, the talent on defense is going to be pretty equivalent to the talent on the offensive side of the ball for those teams. And I expect some teams in the SEC to be able to move the ball.
Yeah, but I think you go back and you mentioned the ball. I mean, I remember going back and looking at that game against Missouri last year. And the way that game started, you know, that was really about the only SEC East team. South Carolina did play them tough, but you know, they couldn't put points up on the board. But Missouri came out there and just for a quarter and a half was kind of going up and down the field with the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean that was really the only team that was able to do it. So they Missouri averaged 10.1 yards per throw, but Missouri has probably one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC in Drew Locke and was able to do that. Florida averaged 2.6 yards per throw, and so that's not good, obviously, and one of the reasons why the game turned out that way. Georgia's defense last year was really, really good. If you look at the yards above replacement for the quarterbacks that they faced, only 2 quarterbacks were actually above average. One was Locke in the game against Missouri, and they were able to pull that out. The other one was Stidham in the game against Auburn, and they were not able to pull that out. And so, you know, I think last year they were really, really, really good. If Kirby Smart can get them to play at the level that they did last year, Georgia is going to win the East. I mean, that's just the way it is. The hope is that they take a step back. I think there are reasons to believe that they would, but if they don't, it's bad news for everybody in the East.
Yeah, because the two key games, and if you want to go back and look at Just for comparison's sake, look, we all remember 42-7 for Georgia beating Florida last year. But also go back and look at Georgia versus Mississippi State, and Mississippi State was coming off a big win versus LSU. This was a top matchup when Mississippi State traveled to Georgia, 31-3. Look at Florida and look at Mississippi State. They scored a combined 10 points on Georgia last year. So, you hope with Dan Mullen and Todd Grantham and, a lot of the coaching staff coming up from Mississippi State, hopefully can figure out a little something more than, what happened last year from the Florida side, of course, with the current roster, but a lot of mental things going on there with Jim McElwain, but also Dan Mullen and that staff coming over didn't really go to Athens and put up much of a fight against Georgia last year with what most would consider right now, not overall recruiting talent as far as comparing talent from Mississippi State to Florida, but more developed talent Mississippi State has, especially being under Dan Mullen for so long and still going to Athens and getting beat 31-3.
Yeah, Georgia was very good last year. I don't think anybody's debating that. I think one of the things that we're going to run into is, if you look at the overall recruiting averages coming into this year, Georgia's at 4, Florida's at 14.5, Tennessee's at 14, South Carolina's at 21, Kentucky's at 34.8, Vanderbilt's at 52. So, you figure Kentucky and Vandy probably not really in an area where it's competitive, but can the 21st best team beat the 4th best team in the country any day of the week? Sure. So can one of those guys, either Florida, Tennessee, or South Carolina, get Georgia? Absolutely. Is it the most likely outcome? Probably not. And so, we can acknowledge that while still saying, hey, if this happens, there might be an opportunity to get them. The other thing I would say about Georgia's schedule is they have Austin Peay to lead things off, but then they immediately go on the road to South Carolina. Then they have Middle Tennessee State and then immediately on the road to Missouri. So they've got two road games early against two of the better quarterbacks in the SEC. Now, I'm not real impressed with Jake Bentley, but he's obviously a third-year starter. It's going to be a big home game at South Carolina. That's a space where the Gamecocks might be able to get Georgia. And then again, we already mentioned Locke was able to move the ball at Georgia last year. Well, now he's going to have a less experienced Georgia defense, and he's going to be playing at home against Georgia, and we'll see. Missouri's defense improved quite a bit. We'll talk about this in one of the previews. Missouri's defense improved quite a bit as the season went along, and if Missouri can continue some of those gains, they could give Georgia a run for their money too. So that's the nice part about the schedule if you're hoping that Georgia's going to struggle, is that the guys like Felipe Franks and Kentucky, who doesn't have a quarterback yet, and Tennessee with Guarantano and Keller Christ and Vanderbilt with Kyle Shermer, those sort of sub-tier or unproven quarterbacks don't come up until later in the year, and the proven guys are coming up in those first two games, the first two SEC games that Georgia's going to play.
Yeah, and I think we'll know a pretty good bit about Georgia too after that South Carolina game. So, we'll see. Like Georgia, as we said, they're replacing so much. I do expect them to get better as the year goes on. But if a team's going to catch them, they might have to catch them early, like South Carolina, and especially at home, all that South Carolina has them. So, Will, that's our breakdown of the team that's been picked to win the SEC East by all the media there. Of course, I picked them first. When I had the SEC media ballot there, no reason not to pick Georgia first. But I don't think, they're an invincible machine with everything, the leadership and just pure numbers that they have to replace on the team.
No, there are question marks, just like there are with every team. Even Alabama has question marks. It doesn't mean that they're not going to win 3 out of every 4 years. It just means you got to hope this isn't the one of 4. And certainly with some of the battles that are going to be coming up for recruiting, I think it's a big deal to be able to start putting some wins together against your big rivals, and Georgia's certainly one of those.
Yep, cocktail party is always fun, no matter what happens inside the stadium. So my favorite game, Will, but we'll see when it all comes about, when the teams match up in late October. So that's Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his work at readandreaction.com. I'm your host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.